question from Kiran Prabhu. What is the importance of sandwich analogy to explain Bhagavad Gita from philosophical perspective? What is the meaning of the first six chapters and the last six chapters protecting the middle six? Answer: the sandwich analogy is of course not from the scriptures, but it is a variant of a similar analogy given in the scriptures by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. He compares the Bhagavad Gita to a treasure chest which has a upper lid and a lower surface, and in between are the jewels. So he says like that, the upper lid is the last six chapters, the lower lid are the first six chapters, and in between are the jewels, the real treasure is of bhakti. Of course, he adds a further refinement to this analogy by saying that, just like somebody might, to indicate there is a great treasure over here, might put some jewels on the covering of the chest. They might be engraved, or some glimpses of those jewels might be engraved. So like that, these two verses are engraved on the lid. Which are those two verses? Manmanabhava and Sarvadharma Antaritya. So from the philosophical perspective, what is the meaning of protection? Actually, bhakti is self-sufficient. Bhakti is completely independent. And in fact, all other processes attain fulfillment when the practitioners include bhakti within their practices of those particular processes. So karma yoga, jnana yoga, all of them have to include bhakti if they are to lead to success. So certainly, if they depend on bhakti, bhakti cannot get protection from them. So the protection is not for bhakti per se. The protection is in the sense of not giving a confidential message to undeserving people. It's like in the Bible it is said that don't throw pearls to a swine. That it's not just a biblical saying. It's a traditional saying also. That if a pig is given a pearl, the pig's capacity to understand is only a stool. And therefore, even if he is given the pearl, he will put aside the pearl and look for stool. So like that, if people who are not having evolved spiritual values by which they can appreciate the glory of bhakti, if they are told about bhakti, they will start taking Krishna very cheaply. So now what is the glory of bhakti? Bhakti seems very simple. We're dancing, singing, doing some simple activities like the Vrajavasis, the gopis are milking cows and making butter, churning milk, churning butter, churning curd to make butter, and cooking and doing some simple seeming activities. But these activities, because they are done with devotion to Krishna, they are conquering the heart of Krishna. So the glory of bhakti is that Bhagavan, who is the supreme Ishvara, becomes Anishvara Iva. Aham Aswatantra Iva Dvijaha. Lord Narayan tells Durvasa Muni that Aham Bhakta Pradhino Yaswatantra Iva Dvijaha. I am not Swatantra, I am Paratantra. I am not Aswatantra, my dear Lord, because I am conquered by my devotees. So, this understanding of God as submitting to his devotees is not something which those whose loving sentiments are not yet developed can appreciate. So for such people, the paths of karma and jnana are best to get them out of the material world primarily. So actually, the path of karma gradually helps persons to become detached while acting in this world. And path of jnana helps people to become utterly detached from this world so that they can focus on the next world. Although they do not have a clear understanding of the ultimate reality that is there in the next world, but they are at least focused on Brahman. So, these two paths are revealed to people who are not yet evolved enough to appreciate the glory of love. Now we may say, how can there be any person who can't appreciate the glory of love? Actually, that is because we have not gone through the Vedic culture where primarily the conception of God is in first of all in Aishwarya's the Sahasra Shirsha Purusha, the absolute truth who has thousands of hands and thousands of legs. And the idea is God is so great, whatever I want he will fulfill if I just please him. And if you look at the Mahabharata, the Ramayana will describe how the Devatas and the Supreme Lord, they come and when big yagyas are performed and they accept the offerings. So the reverential conception of God is given so that people will understand that God is so great and so opulent and so resourceful that if I worship him, then by that worship, he will fulfill my desires. So if somebody wants to do worship of God according to Karma Kanda and he wants to do that because he has so many material desires, then the understanding of Krishna as Vrajaraj is not at all suitable for such a person. Because they'll think, oh, this person is living in a village and herding cows. How can he give me a kingdom? So Dhruva Maharaj was able to think about it that way because Narad Muni instilled that faith within him, and that is rare. But otherwise, for most people, they think, you know, if I want money, I have to go to a person who has money. So the conception of Krishna as a God who renounces opulence and who is conquered by the love of his devotees is something which is quite spiritually at the pinnacle, and it requires some level of spiritual advancement to appreciate it. If we are having devotee association, then the devotees may be able to get enable us to appreciate it. So, but for those people who can get a misunderstanding about Krishna and who can take bhakti cheaply as just some sentimental activity, as many people do, so for them, they are protected from these misunderstandings about bhakti by the delineation of the path of karma and jnana. So, when people understand, okay, this karma path is quite, it requires a good amount of stuff. I have to act, but I should not be attached. I have to contemplate, I have to introspect, and I have to realize that I am different from the body, that this world is temporary and there is something eternal, and therefore I should not be attached to this. It requires a lot of philosophical thought. Similarly, the path of jnana requires even greater philosophical rigor to do naiti, to reject everything in the world, not just physically but also intellectually reject it, so that one can focus on the absolute truth. So when people who are impressed by these externals, people are impressed by a lot of vigorous external action or a lot of vigorous external renunciation. Not vigorous, rigorous external renunciation. So when people understand that both these paths, they are quite complex and they seem to be made of stuff, but both these paths culminate in bhakti, then they understand that bhakti is not ordinary. It must be extraordinary if both these paths, which are so tough and so intricate, actually they culminate in bhakti, then bhakti must be something very special, very special. So in this way, they get a clear understanding of the glory of bhakti when bhakti is not directly revealed to them, but it is gradually revealed to him, sandwiched between these two. So if you want, so those who are interested in the intellectual thing, they will go to the jnana path and they will study the jnana path, and then they will think, oh, but Krishna is already talking about bhakti as the culmination of jnana. So that means bhakti must be special. So then they will want to know about more bhakti more, then they will come to the middle six chapters. Those who want to know about karma, they will read the first six chapters, they will understand, oh, this is a good path, but this culminates in bhakti, oh, then bhakti must be special. So in this way, actually, the middle six chapters are protected in the sense that we are protected from taking those chapters cheaply by helping, by being given the understanding that these chapters represent the summit of spiritual knowledge, and that summit lies at the top of the ascent when we go up the paths of karma or jnana. That is the meaning of the analogy of a jewel trunk or a sandwich. Thank you.